how to start?
Well, you know, it's just writing. I mean,
here's something important to remember about dialogue.
Every word matters.
No, it doesn't.
They're vital.
I want to go to this place that I think it needs to go to.
The only thing that counts is what you see on the screen.
I will write like 4, 5, 6 hours a day.
And it will be a voice made of ink and rage.
Okay, I'm really glad you asked me that question.
Welcome back to the show. In this episode, I sat down with Ned Benson. Ned's a writer, director, and producer known for his profound storytelling. His debut film, The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, premiered at Cannes in 2014 and showcased his unique narrative approach by exploring dual perspectives on love and loss. His recent film, The Greatest Hits, which is on Hulu, follows a love story centering on the connection between music and memory and how they transport us, sometimes literally. In this interview, we talk about Eleanor Rigby, networking, and how he met people like Oscar Isaac, Jessica Chastain, and Scarlett Johansson, his work on the movie Black Widow, his latest film Greatest Hits, of course, and the process of moving from shorts to full features, along with much more. Here's my conversation with Ned Benson.
I think I just always loved movies and theater as a kid. I remember like doing plays in elementary school and just like going back into the costume room and just the props area and just being like, this is like too cool. And then, yeah, I just always love movies, watch movies with my brother, both my brothers. And yeah, then we just were making movies on, you know, old VHS tape to tape stuff all the way through high school. It wasn't something I really thought I could actually do. I came out to LA and interned for a bunch of people and then got to college and a bunch of buddies of mine were making shorts and I was in them and helping with them. And I think there it was like, oh, maybe I should try making a short film. And I did. And from there kind of got my first agent and then wrote some scripts and, you know, one script got a little traction and all of a sudden I was like, maybe I can do this. And, you know, at one point I was like, oh, wow, I can pay the rent and pull this off. So that was kind of the evolution of it all.
Did you go with sort of the, in terms of the short films, did you go with like the Robert Rodriguez, let's use what we have and make a story out of it? How did you kind of think about making this?
Kind of, yeah. I think the first short I made cost, you know, it was like more expensive than it should have been. You know, it was like pulled together with some friends' money, my own money. And like, it was great. But then I was like, oh, we should just make these for as little and for as many favors as possible. So I had a friend who was a DP and he had a red cam and, you know, we were just running around making stuff. So I'd write like little pieces and, you know, I had friends who were actors and we just kind of like would go out and, you know, shoot these shorts and have so much fun. But really they were more like exercising a muscle, you know, it was just like trying stuff and seeing what would happen and kind of learning to direct through the experience of it all. I can't say many of them were that good, but you know, they were fun.
How did that like lead to Eleanor Rigby? And was there ever a decision where it might be a movie or how did you kind of see it as that story?
Yeah. So initially I wrote a script when I was like 25, 26 called In Defiance of Gravity. And that got on the blacklist. I think it was one of the first or second years of the blacklist and made, you know, I started getting meetings around town and then I wanted to direct that. And we cast it up a few different ways and a few different times, you know, like Joan Allen was involved. Jamie Bell was involved. Mary Winstead, Kate Mara, like a lot of different people got involved at different times. It just never tried to pull financing together. Had a DP, you know, like was ready to make it and it just never came together. So the year after I wrote that, I wrote another script, which was the first half of Eleanor Rigby. And that got on the blacklist. And then I met Jessica Chastain. And like a year later, I shared that script with her. And she basically started asking me questions about the Eleanor character in the movie, since the first half of the script was kind of Connor's lens, the lead character that James McAvoy played. And she asked me to flesh it out. So I started to flesh it out in a document. And then it actually became a whole second script. So I had that. And then she was like, well, this is interesting. Like, let's try and make this. And I think it was just bonkers enough to get, you know, people interested in it, along with the fact that, you know, she was on this huge upswing in her career. And then other people wanted to work with her. And, you know, my producer, Cassandra, and I really just kind of like hustled that one together.
It's kind of a tough question, but like, how would you think about some of that initial, like, networking's an icky word, but it's just like finding kindred spirits. You have similar ideas and tone and story. Like, how do you think about some of those things?
It never felt like networking. It felt like a group of friends. Like, my producing partner I've known since I was a kid, Jessica, and I had a group of friends that included like Jeremy Strong, Jess Wexler. There was, you know, I met Oscar Isaac at that time. You know, like, there were a lot of people who'd like gone to Juilliard with her, and there was just a bunch of actors that were like working in theater and trying to make stuff. And it was this kind of young, amazing, creative group of people who like worked really hard, were very talented, and we all just wanted to like make things. So I think, you know, that movie came out of, you know, a bunch of friends trying to make something, and it worked out.
Do you think we'll see more, you know, multi-perspective stories? Like, when that show The Affair came out, I thought, oh, we're going to see a lot of this. Like, I really thought that was going to happen. It hasn't really happened. What's your take on multi-perspective stories?
I think they're great. I think it's just like, you know, you look at Rashomon, you look at Alexandria Quartet, The Affair, you know, I mean, I think I love looking at different perspectives. I think the movie medium is a tough one for it because you have, you know, only so much time to really tell these stories and flesh out these characters in between 90 minutes and, you know, sometimes more than 3 hours with film. So I think the television medium is a good one for it. But I don't know. I don't know how to answer the question or not, because I love the idea of, you know, dropping into the subjective experience of different characters in a show and really like seeing an event from different angles. You know, I'm all in on it. I don't know. It might be the business itself is just, you know, is not willing to make those types of movies or shows, you know.
Did that mindset and those conversations with the actors change the way that you write future stories? Do you, you know, give them more backstory, more information? Do you do anything that's not in the script to help character?
100%. I mean, I try to give as much subtext and create as much subtext as possible with them before we make the movie, before, you know, when we're in rehearsal and we're trying to like discover what the scenes are and really enhance the scenes with, you know, a fleshed out character and a three-dimensional human being. So, yeah.
How did you get involved with Black Widow initially?
I got involved with Black Widow because I had written a script for Scarlett Johansson and her company. And she, I guess, you know, saw stuff in that script that I've written for her that she thought made sense in terms of me being a part of the rewrite of Black Widow. So it was really her driving that and bringing me in and sharing that script with Marvel and the director, Kate Shortland, and having me come in and talk with them about, you know, doing that rewrite, which I did. And it was a pretty awesome experience.
And that one was maybe more of a character piece. It kind of goes into her backstory and sisters and that kind of thing too.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you see like a certain lane that you gravitate towards? Is it like family relationships? Is there something specifically that makes a work yours?
I like to sort of definitely move through genres. I don't like to sort of like pigeonhole myself in any sort of specific space. I think it's really the story that interests me and the world that interests me and some place that I'm going to learn something new. As a writer that I'm going to have to like research and understand. I don't like rehashing too much, but I think that the common thread is finding those relationships, finding those, a depth of character, you know, through the relationships in the story that connects you to the people that you're experiencing this context with.
What was the, like, without giving too much away, what was the initial idea for The Greatest Hits?
I read this book called Musicophilia by Oliver Sacks, which is about how music and the brain interact. And he talked about things like musical hallucinations. He talked about synesthesia. And I've always been profoundly affected by music as a medium. Like, it actually really does throw me back in time to very specific moments in my life in pretty deep detail. So those two things combined, I think, made me think about writing a a movie about music and time travel and the sort of psychology of how music exists in our lives, the emotion of how music interacts with our lives, and really, you know, I wouldn't describe it as a sci-fi movie. I'd describe it as like a more of a psychological or emotional movie. But that's kind of how I got into that.
Is that usually, and I'm not sure if you sold the idea or sold the script, but is that usually how you decide about like what idea to pursue next? Is it what you're most obsessed about? Is there some deeper connection? How do you think about that?
It's a bit of both. I mean, you know, I get super excited about something, and then the people I work with are like, no, you know, like this is not the one. And then I get excited about stuff and I'll just write it and then I'll share it and, you know, it'll work out or it won't. But a lot of it is this sort of like, you know, you have an idea and you see who responds to that idea, and you sort of you bounce it off a wall and see what kind of reaction you get back. And then if that reaction is excitement, then you get more excited. So it's like, you know, it's this initial idea that you kind of flirt with, and then it sort of blossoms into this relationship based on the sort of feedback that you get. And I think that makes me then get more and more excited about it. And then when I realize I have something that's working, you know, I just kind of dive head first into it. So it's a bit of a few different things that need to happen in order for me to really like go head first in it. But you also want to know that you're writing something that people are going to be excited about and respond to, because otherwise you're kind of in a vacuum.
Has there ever been a point where, you know, your team or your like associates are excited, but it's just not working for you? Like, is there anything like that that comes to mind? How do you make that decision?
For sure. I mean, I think, you know, someone will have a project, you know, that they're like, this is great for you. And there's, you know, it's like, there's an opportunity there, and you try your hardest to get excited about it, but you know, you can't really engage because you're like, I don't know how to write this. Like, I'm not the right person to engage in this, because like my heart's not going to be in it. And I think for me, like I need to really fall in love with the subject matter and fall in love with the world. And in order to do a good job, you know, like I'm not going to phone anything in. Like there's no point to that. It's a waste of everybody's time. So for me, it's just important that I find something that I'm suitable for, particularly in for hire situations, and something I think I can do a good job at, because the whole point is this collaborative effort to make a movie or get a movie made. So
do you have a different approach when it's for hire as opposed to maybe when you're going to be the writer director? Is there anything different about the script?
Not really. I kind of approach the script the same. I think it's particularly, especially in the earlier drafts, I think when I know I'm directing something, it's usually after I've written the first draft. And then I reapproach that draft from a more, I guess, directorial sensibility, but I'm kind of directing as I write anyway. You know, I'm sort of seeing it how I would want to see it. And, you know, you don't want to put too much singularity on something, you know, in terms of like you don't want to have too much of a directorial point of view on a script, but you want to give enough there where people can glean what they need or make the assumptions that they need, and have the detail that they need to sort of live in the world. But you definitely come back, you know, as a director and then start talking about how you're going to, what a shot is going to look like, or if, you know, there's a dolly you know, we move in or this or that, you know. So I think you start seeing it differently when you revisit it and you know that you're directing.
You know, as the writer director, are there certain questions you always ask actors, or is it kind of different based on each character? Like, how do you think about some of those early conversations?
I think, you know, for me, I definitely like to get to know people as human beings first. You know, like I want to like see that we're going to get along or understand each other and trust each other, because that's a huge part of this. Like, they're putting their trust in me and I'm putting my trust in them. And, you know, I kind of want to, it's like having a coffee with someone and just getting to know them at first. So like, I think those initial meetings are really more just like meeting somebody and then you know, getting into the nitty gritty of the project itself. And then, yeah, I mean, yes, then we just go really deep, and it's, I have questions for them in terms of their interpretation, and, you know, they question me in terms of what I'm thinking on things. And it's this constant dialogue that becomes a rehearsal process, you know, where you start to figure out what this movie's going to be and who these characters are going to be. And that's just so much fun.
Are there any difficulties in kind of like transitioning hats, meaning like you may have written something, but you find something better in the moment? How do you kind of decide that North Star between the original writer's vision and you, the director, in that moment?
I think I usually lean into the director. You know, I'm constantly rewriting, right? So it's like, I think, you know, you have your script, and then you go into the rehearsal process and you work with the actors and kind of see how the script is working with them and what their organic interpretation of the script is and what words feel better, you know, coming out of their mouth, you know, versus what I have on the page. So you tailor it to them through that rehearsal process. And then, you know, you get on the day, and that's kind of the coolest part, is like, you know, you have only so much time to get this scene, but you see on the first take what's working or not. And then you have to editorialize in that second take, like, okay, well, that this piece isn't working, and, you know, like, we need to change this. And you know, obviously you do a rehearsal on the day as well, so you're finding it through that, but it's this fine tuning through the takes where you try and get the best version of the scene. And, you know, you do as many takes as feels appropriate to you and the actors, but also, like, you're seeing what you're kind of editing the movie as well in that moment, and just finding the beats that you need or get. And, you know, particularly on movies like that I make that have lower budgets, where you're just like, oh, I'm never going to get a perfect take, but I'm going to get pieces of takes that can then become the scene.
Was there anything that surprised you about moving from shorts to features, besides it, you know, being longer shoots and that kind of thing? Anything that was different?
Yeah, it's massively different. But I didn't treat shorts the way that I treat a feature. I treated shorts as this kind of like experiment, because there was so little money involved and at stake. Like, you're not making money off of shorts. You're experimenting, which is why, like, you know, when I meet film students, I'm like, make stuff on your iPhone, like make it for nothing. You know, because you can do cool stuff with an iPhone now. Like, there's so much opportunity, you know, to make things technically kind of incredibly with stuff that's very accessible to people. But yeah, when you get into making a movie, like, the financial stakes are much higher. Like, you know, creatively, it's much more of a juggernaut. You're overseeing an entire economy. And Yeah, you know, I love the experience. It's so creatively fulfilling and all consuming. But yeah, there's so much more involved creatively, you know, and the stakes are much higher, and it's a different beast, I think, you know, for sure. But I think you can apply the same, mentality to shorts as you do to film. Like, I mean, you can, like, Wes Anderson did, like, Henry Sugar last year, which is like an incredible short film, and made just like he makes all of his other films. But I think for me, it just, those were more experimental and made with what I could make them. And, you know, then when I got the chance to make a feature, it was like, all right, well, I'm giving this everything and going to be a little bit less laissez-faire with it. It's not an experiment anymore. Like, you know, this is, you know, everything.
Besides, like, not being experimental, are there other, like, common problems you see in shorts that people are making? Like, are they, I kind of think of the way people think of contained thrillers and high concept and maybe not enough character, anything like that that comes to mind?
I mean, I've seen so many amazing shorts. I mean, one of my favorite shorts of all time is, like, Wasp by Andrea Arnold. It's so good. And I'm, like, getting to work with her as a director now. So that's, like, so cool for me. But I think there's so many amazing shorts out there. I mean, like, it's a medium in itself, just like short stories are versus novels. So I think, you know, but I always approach shorts again as this way to learn, and this way to try things, and maybe not, like, I didn't overly focus on story as much, you know. I was just playing with mood more than I was with story, if that makes sense. But yeah, I mean, I think however you want to approach a short is the way you should approach it. I think if you're a young student, you know, it's like make a short for as little as you can. And I think obviously there are shorts that are much bigger and, you know, go on to win Academy Awards. And, you know, some of those have big budgets and some of them are smaller budgets, but I think it's a medium unto itself for sure.
Did you always have like making those shorts? Did you always have this level of like discipline or persistence? Cause it seems like you would do something that, you know, maybe it didn't work out, but it led to a relationship. It led to a job down the line that a lot of young people don't realize. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think to your point, like this is a long game. Like this is a marathon. Like Mike Medavoy, who I was his intern a long time ago when I was like 16, 17 at his old company, Phoenix. He said to me, like, he's like, this is not a sprint, it's a marathon. And I think that's true. It's like, you have to look at it as a long-term aesthetic project, and that whatever short or movie or script or whatever, it's all part of this whole, you know? And I think, yes, those are punctuation marks along the way, but you can't get hung up on if one thing goes right or one thing goes wrong, that defines your entire aesthetic project. It's just a learning curve or a learning part of it, you know. It's a lesson, and it's something that helps you build and grow as a filmmaker. So, you know, I think it's really important to know that you just have to keep writing and keep making stuff, and like the end result is not the thing. That's not the important part. It's the process that's the important part, because you're learning in that process and you're becoming more, you know, a better filmmaker and a better writer, and you know, you're learning more and more things through that process.
We'll just do one more. Any other advice for those kind of trying to break in today? I know you've given a lot of great advice already, but anything else that comes to mind?
Just kind of reiterate what I just said. It's like, just write a ton of scripts, like write and make as many shorts as you can, and like get more and more comfortable making these things, because that's where you get the confidence to try things. And, you know, I operate on doubt. I think doubt is an important part of my process. Like if I'm too confident, I know I'm in trouble. Like if I'm like, this is so good, like I'm in deep shit. But like, I think, you know, it's really just like putting your head down and writing stuff and making stuff and, you know, figuring out what your authentic voice is as a writer. And that comes with time and patience, and you know, it's a tough business, because like you lose way more than you win, but you have to be willing to like take those losses and failures, and because when you win, it's fantastic. And the wins aren't wins that you exactly designed for yourself, you know what I mean? Like in all young filmmakers' heads, they're like, I want to be Chris Nolan, or I want to be this, but like, you get a movie made, that's a win. You know, you get a movie picked up at a festival, that's a win. Like you got to celebrate those wins along the way. And I've been horrible at that. Like, you know, like I'm always looking at the negative, but I think it's really important. If I were telling my younger self, like, appreciate the wins, and you know, it's part of the process.
Thanks so much for tuning into the show. Before you take off, I want to give you a free gift. I'm giving you my first book, Ink by the Barrel, for free. That's the digital download and audiobook at brockswenson.com. Inside this book, you'll learn how to annihilate writer's block by embracing Elizabeth Gilbert's playful trickster mentality. You can learn to weaponize your anxiety with Kevin Kelly's Different is Better approach. And learn how to defend your time with Ryan Holiday's calendar anorexia mindset. There's just a few other ideas in the book, Ink by the Barrel. It's also based on over 400 interviews I've done right here on Creative Principles. So go steal that book right now, Ink by the Barrel, to learn how to be a prolific writer. You can get your copy, that's digital download and audiobook, at brockswinson.com, brockswinson.com. If it's your first time here, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode.